United Nations Human Rights Commission. Towards the end of last year, the Sunday Colour Supplements carried a number of lavish six-page advertisements for an equally lavish library. They were offering a private, leather-bound, 100-book collection of, and I quote, the finest stories of the world's greatest writers. You'll appreciate that lavish isn't overstating the case when I tell you that each volume in this strictly limited edition, printed and bound for private subscribers only by the Franklin Library of Bromley Road, London, cost £29. But the advertisement implied that every bibliophile would be sorry to miss the chance of such a literary boon. But was it a boon? Gavin Scott has been examining this very special offer.
Never before have the matchless stories of the greatest writers of the ages been published in an edition of such beauty and luxury. A private library unlike any other ever published anywhere in the world. The collected stories of the world's greatest writers will be privately printed and bound for individual subscribers only. The collection will not be made available to the public through bookshops, nor through even the most distinguished dealers in rare manuscripts.
And not only was the offer to be denied such dealers, it was also to be produced in quantities which would ensure its rarity. It was a strictly limited edition.
Subscription rolls close the 31st of October 1976, and there is a further limit of one collection per subscriber. Thus, the total edition will be limited to the exact number of applications received, postmarked by the closing date.
And how many, I asked Mr. Leslie Vintner of John Pincher's, the firm concerned, was that?
Well, it takes us some time to count the subscriptions and get them all ratified, as it were, a period of months. We always allow 4 months before we can actually issue a properly audited limit of edition figure.
The fact remains, however, that not only is this offer being made in Britain, but also in the United States, where the population is somewhat larger. And until the information is available about just how many have been printed, the purchasers, who are handing over £29 for each of these rare volumes, might well be a little concerned. However, the other major selling point in the company's advertising is the appearance of the books.
The binding will be of leather, and only the most luxurious leathers will be used. Matching the extraordinary quality of the bindings, the end sheets will be of the moire fabric, with the inimitable sheen and depth of colour only moire can provide. The spine itself will have the classic hubs, the raised horizontal ridges, that are a traditional feature of the bookbinder's art.
But is it traditional bookbinding? It has been suggested that these books are in fact bound not by skilled craftsmen, but by machines. I asked Mr. Vintner if that could be the case.
Oh no, there's a tremendous amount of handmade work that goes into them. The leathers, of course, are selected, and the particular pieces of leather are selected, and they are clicked made particularly thinned out, skived, I think is the technical word, to make the edges of the leather fold over the covers themselves. And in fact, all the covers are put together by hand. The gold work on the cover is put together by hand. And so that the actual case, well, I think that's the technical term, has been made virtually by hand with very little machine help.
To clarify this, we contacted Zehndorf's, the well-known bookbinders, and discovered that they had been involved in the production of the library. Their role is to make prototype hand-bound books, which are then sent to America and reproduced for the private subscribers. Mr. Vintner had provided us with a sample of his firm's wares, Gulliver's Travels, and I asked the managing director of Zehndorf's, Mr. Tony Rainbird, to compare it with the prototypes they turn out.
Well, obviously, one can tell that it is not a handmade book.
How can you tell that?
How do you tell chalk from cheese? Any person who knows anything about bookbinding instantly will say that, you know, it's not a handmade book.
Mr. Rainbird went on to tell me that although his firm uses the most expensive leathers on the prototypes, including Oasis Niger Goatskin, the leather on the books that are actually sold is not the same, and indeed is considerably thinner. Nevertheless, they are leather, they are liberally covered with 22-carat gold, and they do contain the works of the world's greatest writers, including Zane Grey. The advertisement promises...
Once each subscriber's collection has been completed, the special printing plates and cover dies will be destroyed. The only way for collectors in future years to acquire these rare books will be by purchase from an original owner at a privately negotiated price.
So I went along with Gulliver's Travels to Mr. John Maggs of Maggs Brothers in Berkeley Square, leading dealers in fine books, and asked him what sort of price he would be prepared to negotiate privately with me.
We shouldn't offer for it.
Why not? It isn't our sort of book.
But it's a beautifully bound book, isn't it?
No, it's horrible. It's got no character at all. It's purely a facsimile binding.
But it's got all that gold stamped in the cover.
Gold stamped all over it, yes, but absolute vulgarity. No, no taste at all.
If you open the inside, however, they've got this moire end papers.
Yes, tasteless.
The cost of this book to buy is £29. Do you think that one could buy a book as well-bound as that appears to be for a similar sum?
For much, much less. Because when people left Eton, for instance, in the last century, it was common to give everybody in your class a souvenir, and they were known as Eton bindings. And they were beautiful. They were in lovely full leather, the most beautiful quality. And you buy those sometimes around the market for £5 or £10, depending on what the book is.
Now, this book is, of course, new. Do you think there is any possibility that over the years it might increase in value?
Not as far as I would say. There's no reason for that.
But beauty, of course, is in the eye of the beholder. And should anyone who, after waiting the 8.5 years it will take to complete the library and paying out the £2,900 it will cost to buy it, feel in any way dissatisfied with his collection of books, he can always settle down to read them. This is one of the main advantages of spending your money on books.
That report was by Gavin Scott. Perhaps the most famous journalist in the world, and certainly the most popular, is a 16-year-old Belgian boy with a strange lick of hair, a pair of plus fours, and a terrier. Not only famous, but successful. An astounding 40 million copies of his adventures have been sold in a score of languages. If you haven't guessed already, the journalist's name is Tintin, and he's the hero of a series of elaborate and colourful comic books by the Brussels author Georges Rémy, better known as Hergé. This week, Hergé made a rare visit to London to promote the paperback publication of the latest saga, Tintin and the Picaros, and Gavin Scott, a long-time Tintin enthusiast, asked him about the origins of it all, way back in 1929.
The newspaper in which Tintin was published was a Catholic newspaper. Then, you know, everything, the Bolshevik was atheist, and I was involved in this movement, and Tintin was an anti-Bolshevik at this time. That's why he went first to Russia, to denounce all the atrocities and all the